Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. And having said that, along with some of my sister stations, Aramar Tefio would like to apologize for the treatment that the U.S. government is giving the Syrian people and other people around the world very unfairly. We do not support that. Good evening and welcome to the round. I'm Rosanna Marcy Theo, Ra, and later on Sarit Jacobson will be here viewing the world. Right now I've got a couple pieces of news that may not be mainstream because little as worthwhile is, it seems. But as many of you know, who know me personally, know that Kashmir and Palestine are like forever on my mind. So I just wanted to say that you may not know that near the beginning of September, and there was a pretty much the yearly flood in occupied Kashmir. But this one has been the worst in over a century. And the treatment of the people has shown more of the corruption in the Indian government. Food, water, medical supplies, all of this is not being delivered to the people as it should be. A lot of NGOs sent aid, and it's not getting there. The way planned. Some of it is getting to the people. Other things are just being bought by underhanded people. Who find underhanded people to give the money to? So, anyway, this is just another way that Kashmiris are being kept under the thumb of India. So please keep them in your thoughts. And also, we've all been hearing about Ebola. There's a leading charity I'm sure you've heard of called Save the Children. They say that there are 5 new cases of Ebola an hour in Sierra Leone. This is, again, another West African country. So there were 765 new cases last week with only 327 beds. And the figures are doubling and doubling and doubling. So, again, keep them in your thoughts, please. Now, the latest company, which I found quite interesting, following in the footsteps of Google and Microsoft, Yelp and Yahoo, to leave ELEC. As most of you know, that means the American Legislature Exchange Council, which is really hell for the rest of us, is Occidental Petroleum. I think that this may be the first actual big oil company. So they understand about climate change, and that makes them at odds with ELEC. So, you know, good move on their part. There's a couple things also about the environment. If you will go to earthfirst.org, I'm sure that many of you have heard of Earth First in the past, and they were, years and years and years ago, they were best known for sticking nails in trees, and then the loggers would have an accident with their saws. They started in 1979. And they've been frontline. You don't always hear about them or what they do, but they are the environmental group that actually takes complete direct action. So they aren't necessarily, there's nothing wrong with all the petitions and all of this, and I'll sign them. I suggest you do when they come around. But it's good to know that there's some direct action being taken or that you might want to take also. So please go ahead, go to earthfirst.org, and they have a lot of links to other groups and all. It's quite interesting there. Now, in the new Living Planet Index, this is put out by the London Geological Society. It says that the wildlife population has halved in the last 40 years. And those of you on Facebook probably have seen this in the last couple of days. So there's a lot that we can do. And many of you know where I stand on this. So contact me if you're interested in taking action for yourself, your fellow beings, and the planet. Also, come on, tune back to this station tomorrow night at 7 o'clock for Feed Your Head, Curtis Truth Seeker, also Curtis Roberson, is a vegan and an author from Cleveland, Ohio, and he will be here with me. So that's going to be very enlightening. Very nice man, and he's got a lot to say. On a personal level, I was hacked since we have talked last Thursday night. They got me, and they got me good. I was totally disappeared from Facebook, and I lost over 4,000 Facebook friends. I lost a couple groups that I was the only admin of. I was taken off of a lot of other groups, and I lost some pages, of course, and all this, but everything else had admins besides me, so I'm back on most of those things, but I had been added, not necessarily with my consent, to actually hundreds of groups. And they were things I didn't participate in necessarily, but I checked in on them sometimes. So I'm open for more groups, and the same with pages, because everything is wiped out. I probably don't need to tell you what I think of hackers. I don't mind hackers that hack into government places that are not being transparent like they should be, but I do have a thing about people who just try to wreck other people. So, I know putting it in perspective, it's not compared to people who have no food, have no medical supplies or water or anything, but on a personal level, it's pretty devastating. So, you know, the main thing is, obviously, they're not shutting me up, so there you have it. Also, tomorrow is World Farm Animals Day. It's always the 2nd of October. And 2 years ago, in 2012, in Tel Aviv at Rabin Square, the animal activists, there were several, actually I believe there were three who got branded. This was to show what it's like for animals. They had found a dairy calf who had the number 269 on him, and they did save him from slaughter. So there came to be an organization. It's called 269 Life. You can find it on the web. You can find it on Facebook. And these people, these three, did get the actual branding done, which somebody had third-degree, I think, burns. I mean, it's horrible. And this is what people put animals through all the time and don't think anything about it. Oh, it's just an animal. Well, you know, when you can smell your flesh burning, and, you know, this is bad. So after that, many people started getting the tattoos. And I have to say that this is the only tat I have on my arm, 269. And it's very good because gives people something to ask about, you know, and then we can start talking about the movement, about being vegan. And it's the same thing that for, oh, goodness, how long? 26 years, maybe, I've worn a pentagram around my neck. And I've never hidden it. I've never felt the need to. And that also, especially in the past, now people are more used to seeing things like that, but it was sort of an open door. People could ask questions about it, and they would get straight answers. And that's the way I feel about this tat. So I want to thank those guys who took the pain. And after that, people were advised not to ever do the branding, but the tats were good. And so there's a lot of people running around with 269 somewhere on their body. So just remember the torture and the abuse that the farm animals go through. And tomorrow is their day. We're hoping sometime to be able to do away with that. Mercury goes retrograde this coming Saturday. Mercury has to do with communication and transportation. So just be aware that it may try to screw you up. Before you sign contracts and things, read them 20 times. You know, just take your time with all of these things, and I'm sure it'll be fine. It's an interesting time. It comes 3 times a year. I think that's all that I was going to talk about. Yes, I did get 24 more pounds of bananas. You know, I buy bananas in a 40-pound box, and I was in my store yesterday, and the produce man saw me, waved, and came over, and he said, you know, we've got some bananas that are ripe, and we've already put them out. We've, you know, packaged them and put them out. Do you want them? You want some? And I went over, and it's like, you know, a bunch of these packages with 5 or 6 bananas or whatever. And I said, yeah, I'll take them. So I got 24 more pounds at a very good price. So, hey, this is all part of simple living, eating the best things and dumping the rest. Like many of you know, I eat very processed foods, and I'm healthier than anyone around me. So that must be saying something. Anyway, I'm going to shut up. Well, sort of, and bring in tonight's guest, Ani Massey. Hello, Ani.
Hello.
Hey.
We go back years and years, and we just recently reconnected. And Ani is a published author now. Just tell me how you got into writing way back in the first place, Ani.
The original writing that I got into was actually... basically started off as a role-playing game. I was fascinated with one of my characters and decided to start writing stories about him. And it kind of went from there to actually full-on novels, and I'm working on my next one right now, in fact.
Wow. No, I did not know that it came from a role-playing game. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have done things connected to those games, I believe. But I do want to say also that you are on Facebook. Ani P. Massey, author.
Yes.
Yes. And I know what the P stands for. I remember.
Yes, you do.
I do. So, anyway. But well, how long ago was this that you started writing more about your characters?
5 or 6 years ago. I now have 2 full novels, another one coming out in February, in fact. And we just released... I headed up a multi-author anthology that benefits the local LGBT community center near where I live.
Right. Well, now, with the what made you decide to be part of this anthology? Do you know these people in person, and you all sat around talking, or how did this come about?
Sort of. Actually, it was my idea. I proposed it to S.J. Davis, who's the owner of Crushing Hearts Black Butterfly Publishing, who publishes my other book.
What's the name of it again? I know it was CHBB.
Crushing Hearts and Black Butterfly Publishing.
Ah, okay.
It's a big name, but it's a fabulous publishing. It's small press, but very, you know, you actually know everybody. It's not...
Yeah.
Just a big corporate thing. You actually get to talk directly to everybody. It's really a lot of fabulous authors and editors, and it's just a wonderful group to work with. And I went to S.J. Davis, who's the owner, and asked about doing a donation anthology where all the authors would donate the stories, so we don't get anything.
Right.
All the money that is made from it goes to the LGBT Community Center in Milwaukee. I actually found out about the community center when there was an event held there that I was invited to, and I got to talking to people, and then I went to Pride Fest this last year and actually got to hang out with quite a few members, including the head librarian of the community center, and got to see a lot of the programs that they do for the older members. Especially for the kids and teens, they've got a lot of stuff for supporting, for helping them find support if they've been, you know, rejected by their families or things like that. And they, of course, always need more support so that they can then turn around and help the community. Yeah. And SJ loved the idea, and I managed to get, including myself, a total of 15 authors into the anthology collection, which is a really fun collection. And it's YA, so there's no naughty bits.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still fun. Oh.
I know your story is Dinner with the Dead. I just love the title. So
it is. It's Dinner for the Dead, and mine is actually it's the head vampire of the house that I write about. She's Irish, and she hosted a dumb supper, and had an ancestor's altar for the dead at Samhain, and that's what the story is basically her little group trying to honor the ancestors, which of course is amusing coming from a vampire.
One would think, yes, that's a little.
It's a little odd, but she's a very odd character, so it worked out in the end.
Okay,
but there's actually a total of 15 stories, and each one is different, but all end with, you know, hope and love and focus, maybe not on the families that we start with, but the families that we build.
Right, which can be much more powerful, actually. And
it is.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned the kids that have been rejected by their families because of sexual orientation. And, I mean, I just keep hearing about them and my heart breaks because it is just so horrible. Right at the time when they need support, when they're, even just coming into teenage years, or maybe they're just about to get out of high school or something, they still need parental family support.
Thank you. And the propensity for homelessness or not living in your own home, maybe not being truly, completely, you know, out in the street, but still being rejected from your own home and thrown away is so, so high. And they don't have anybody a lot of times, and they end up building their own families. You know, those that won't turn on them because they're a little different than what their parents wanted them to be.
It is heartbreaking. I don't know how parents, I don't understand how they can turn their back on their children. I don't
either, and I have children, and I can't imagine ever doing that to my kids.
No, I can't imagine.
So
you ever.
It was something that I felt really, really passionate about, and I was lucky that my publisher was just as adamant to do this project. It was a lot of fun to put together, and I'm extremely proud of all the stories that everybody put into it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's something about that, the working together for a great cause. It lifts everybody up.
Not just the local authors.
Yeah.
It's not local authors. It's I'm local. Marcus is local. But we had authors in Texas, in Canada. One of our authors lives all the way in Germany, and he donated to this because he feels so passionately about the content and what the center did when I presented it.
Where is he?
Germany.
Okay, I hadn't caught. Great. Yeah. No,
that's... We have UK, we have Germany, we have, I think there's one in Australia, a few scattered across the U.S. It's truly a huge international project. The beneficiary happens to be a local center, but the love comes from everywhere.
Exactly. Now, all of these people were already authors with CHBB.
No,
they weren't. No. Okay, I didn't.
Most of them were, but at least five of them were outside authors who, when I posted about doing the project, asked if they could submit stories, and they weren't from there. A couple of them haven't written before but wanted to write something just to help out the center. A couple of the others were from other publishing houses that happened to have seen my post about it and got excited about the idea.
That's wonderful.
Not just a house thing. It was a true collaboration.
Yes. Which heaven knows. I mean, well, we've always needed that, but in the world we have now, we just need many, many more projects like that. I mean, the reaching out. But so now the novels that you've written, are they published or going to be by CHBB also?
Yes, yes. Both of the full novels that are already out are through CHBB, and I write paranormal romances, all Fade to Black style. But they're a lot of fun to write, and I enjoy it, and I get a lot of good feedback, so that's always fun. And well, trust me, my vampires are very, very weird. But hey, it's a good kind of weird.
Okay. Well, you know, people always ask authors, so how much of this is from your own experience, Ani? Considering the topic, paranormal romance. So,
well, obviously, no, I don't have fangs.
Right.
But some of the things that do happen in it are pulled from my life or from friends. When I was younger, I had wanted to be an architect, and one of the main characters, that's what he's in college for right now, in fact. And so some of the things are connected. And in fact, in that series, one of the male main characters, his twin sister, is lesbian, and she goes through some issues with basically harassment and stuff. The project that I was just speaking of actually kind of grows out of that too, because it's something that I managed to include even in my regular full novels. So it's a lot of those little things are things that I've either witnessed, gone through myself, or I know friends of that, you know, they've mentioned, you know, this thing happened and I managed to find a way to work it in. And at least in the books, I get to give them a happy ending.
Right. Right.
Which unfortunately doesn't always happen in the real world.
In real life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very much unfortunately. How big is Milwaukee?
It's what they refer to as a little big city. It's smaller than Chicago, but it's still huge. I don't know the actual population, but it is immense. And the LGBT community there is huge. And very, very supportive. And the community center that I mentioned, the Milwaukee LGBT Community Center, it does so much. It has, you know, a coming out day and support for, you know, the older members in the community that a lot of other communities kind of forget still need support, and the kids and adults, and, you know, helping to fight with getting the right for marriage and adoption, which we've managed in Wisconsin finally. Actually, that coincided with Pagan Pride Fest. The first day of Pride Fest actually was when we got the right for marriage here. So it's a big, huge community, and I love supporting it however I can, whether it's in my writings or the sponsoring or whatever I can do.
Right. I just looked it up. The city, according to census in 2010, has a population of 594,833. So that's a little over 500,000. And then they say that Milwaukee, Racine, Waukesha metropolitan area altogether has a population a little bit over 2 million. As an estimate for 2013.
So I believe it.
4 years ago, Milwaukee had 594,000. So you've probably upped it. You might be around 600,000 or something now. If it's grown a little bit. I was there for Gay Pride 1 year. And it was very moving. The parade and, you know, all the families, parents and family members who were in the parade with signs.
My temple was in it
this year. Sisters and, you know, all the support. It was very, very nice. But, well, Milwaukee has a lot of things. They have a lot of conventions and conferences there.
Oh, yes.
That's, it was some science fiction thing, which I don't know that much about, but I went with some friends. It was fun. But I've never really spent much time there doing anything culturally.
I love getting to go to Milwaukee because I don't live very far from it. So It's really a lot of fun. There's so much there. And like I said, the temple that I'm with, actually, we were in the parade this year.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yes. Yes, we walked in. We're already planning to do it next year. We're already working on our float.
Okay.
Ideas. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is actually kind of funny because there's only the temple as a whole is mostly allies. Not many are actually fall under the LGBT titles, but we all went out there and it was actually their idea. They brought it to me, which I thought was fabulous. So we walked in the parade and we're already planning more. And
I found in the past, like when we were together in New, people were, like in the pagan community, many temples and people were much more supportive, we think. Now it seems like there's some kind of a I don't know, there's a lot of conservative pagans right now. They
there
seem
are,
to be,
which is kind of befuddling. But
yeah, it's like whatever happened here, you know?
I'm not really sure, but luckily my temple's not like that. We're very big on family, we're very big on everybody.
Yeah.
And
I mean that's what we all people should be open because so many of our people have been discriminated against. But you find that sometimes it doesn't work like that. Well, I was discriminated.
No, but I don't understand
I'm going
it.
To discriminate against these other people. So it's humankind. I don't know. Real fast, what kind of advice would you give to somebody who is just starting out, they're writing, they've written a couple short stories or a couple poems or something, and they're not sure of their niche, but they would really like to see their work in print. What advice would you give them, Ani?
First off, keep writing. No matter what, keep writing, and don't let anybody who peeks at your stuff convince you not to. It's an art form you have to keep practicing. The second thing is try to find a publisher who has a very wide range of story types so that they're more inclusive of the different types of genre that's out there because they can then help you. I'm lucky with my publisher because SJ actually she has 4 different imprints under the company. So they take so many different kinds of work, so that makes it a lot easier because just because you don't know your niche does not mean the publisher can't find you one. Just keep writing and keep trying.
No, that is a great point because sometimes people might be too close to their own work to actually see.
As most people who write know, it becomes your baby. Your writing becomes your baby, and you hate letting it out. Even though you want it out there, you still hate giving up any of the control. So just research who you want to publish with, because some of the publishers out there are fabulous, and some of them, been quite a few that have folded in the last few years. So research who you're looking into. And make sure that they don't have a real tight niche if your work is varied.
Okay.
But there's a publisher out there that will help you. And some of them will take new authors and actually help them fine-tune.
Okay. I was actually on a Skype call today with a friend in another country and talking about that because I was talking to him about some publishers. I know if you sign with them, you really give up your baby totally. And that's
I don't do that.
Because you've got
I get to keep control of my characters and I get to keep control of the story.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one of the things that I was real big on because I wasn't going to give up my stories to just anybody.
Right.
You just, it takes a lot of research before you can get to that point. And just because a publisher offers you on your story, you still need to research and make sure that you're really getting the best out of it. Because they may not be the best publisher for you.
Yeah.
So, careful, caution, and never giving up.
Yeah. Very good advice, Ani. I'd love to have you back again.
I'd love to come back.
It's wonderful. So, Ani P. Massey, author, page on Facebook. Do you have, I looked up the book, the anthology, Hope and Love. It is on Amazon.
Yes, it is. It is actually an Amazon exclusive. So if you have the Amazon Unlimited program that they have out now, you can actually read it for free on that.
Oh.
Otherwise, it's only $2.99 for 15 stories. So that's
I know. I saw the price. It's like my
it's a really good, and all of the proceeds, the company's not keeping any of it. They donated the publishing, they donated the cover, they donated everything. So all the proceeds get to go to the Milwaukee LGBT Community Center.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, if you go onto Amazon, it's Hope and Love Anthology.
Right. And I tried to, I was wanting to have a picture on the show, but the Blog Talk wouldn't take the form it was in, so I couldn't do that by the time I was trying to do it. But it's a nice cover, too. So, Ani, thank you so very, very much. Ani P. Massey, yes. And we will talk with you soon, I hope.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Bye-bye.
We're here. Sarit Jacobson views the world. Hello, Sarit.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey. Oh, I'm just really getting off on this beautiful autumn day. What can I say?
It is nice.
It is nice. How about you? What's happening in Tennessee?
It's hard to tell from where I am. I think everything's fine here.
Yep.
Same as usual. Keeping an eye on Israel and Palestine. And as usual, things are looking really bad there. Because the situation keeps deteriorating. And whenever you think it can't get any worse, it gets worse.
Right. Yeah, you have to stop thinking things can't get worse. Because, like you say, every time you think that, well, they will. I saw the other day, and this was like a lowball figure, and this was from several days ago. They had just listed 26 infringements by the Israelis against the Palestinians since the ceasefire. As far as the treatment of people, and you know, on and on. And now I think, what was it, yesterday? The Israelis agreed to go ahead and start building 24 or 26,000, 100 more settlement units. So obviously they don't want peace.
There's no profit in peace for those who make the weapons.
Yeah, this is true.
And those who make the weapons run this show.
Yeah.
They plan in advance, from what I see. I notice they are really fighting the left stronger and harder than ever. And maybe it's because the first time they have a real left to fight with. We have a lot of people refusing to serve an IDF.
Yes.
For example, musician, which I have his name, Omar Saad, has been to jail already 7 times.
Oh, and then they release him, and then they'll pick him up for just because.
They will release you to court, and then when you get back to court, the judge will tell you to go back to jail. So it's really to tease.
That's just
to make them
live
in not knowing is part of their kick, I guess.
Well, because, this is psychological warfare. When the people don't know what to expect, it totally is. That's why they're doing it this way, because they want to have a bunch of people who are basket cases And, you know, just like they call them up supposedly a few times in Gaza, they would call and say, we're going to be, like, droning your area. Get out of your house. The thing is, where can people go? They can't get out of the country. And
they can't even get out of the city.
Right. But like in the West Bank, but in Gaza, I mean, yeah, you're in the Gaza Strip. You can't go anywhere. There's borders everywhere. So
people forget, or maybe people don't know about Palestinian culture. One thing is that most Palestinian homes have 3-4 generations living inside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they're already full. I mean, literally, there's nowhere to move. I have been in a few. I remember I was always invited. I was Israeli. And I was thinking, why are they inviting me? Why are these people so nice to me? Don't they know I'm supposed to be their enemy? And then I realized they're not the enemy.
Exactly.
Oh, it's so sad.
That about you.
They're nice.
Yeah, they're not the enemy.
We have a lot to learn.
Either. So, yeah,
we really have a lot to learn from them. For example, how they take care of their elderly is just inspiring.
You know, a lot of people around the world, actually, a lot of countries are good to their elderly. The United States is probably one of the worst, throwing people off in nursing homes and things.
Oh my God.
A lot of countries wouldn't, you know, think of that. I mean, they're going to take care of them. That's it. And like you said, you've got 3 or 4 generations in a house. And that doesn't mean that it's always roses. I mean, because people are people and they're going to disagree and there may be some quarrels, whatever. But it's a family. They love each other.
It is.
And they make it work. So I think
and
we
can
learn.
Just like us. Their homes are just like ours. They have cats and dogs and chickens, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them are vegetarian and vegan. Some of them are feminists. For example, my friend from Anarchist Against the Wall arrived in the village of Bil'in, and you know how they always say, I'm tackling Islamophobia a bit. You know how they always say, oh, those Islamic men are such chauvinists, and those Islamic men are whatever. Anyway, my friend has met many feminist men, vegetarian Muslim men. I mean, really have a strange view of what Muslims and Arabs are, thanks to Hollywood.
You know what? I've never been disrespected by an Arab man. I can't say that for just American men, although I've not been like disrespected that much by that many people at all. Anyway, but and I have been around Arab people, and I've always been treated excellent.
Yes.
So
they are so dehumanized.
Yes, yes. But the government has to do that. Because, I mean, to get people stupid enough to go off and say, oh, we're going to get those people. We're going to do it. You know, we're fighting for our country.
That's so sad.
I know. They're so ignorant because they're fighting for big multinational companies, including the oil companies and other resource stealers. But people still believe that. There are still people in this country that believe that. So they gladly like give their kid up to the Air Force or the Army or something. Well, he or she, you know, they're going to go over and fight for democracy or bring democracy to that country. And, you know, you never bring democracy by killing the citizens. It's just not the way you do it. That's just too absurd. Too much so.
Exactly. The Anarchist Against the Wall in Israel have a slogan that says you can't build democracy on protesters' bodies.
Very good.
Yeah, I like that. And that's a nice one. They have a documentary with that name. Actually, if you want to check it out.
With the whole name, you can't build democracy? With
on demonstrator. I will send it to you so you can share it on the radio. It's really good. And it shows how the protesters are being shot at while the settlers are dancing and watching and dancing in happiness that the anarchists are being shot at.
Well, it seems like they're pretty good at dancing, right? Like they dance when their
yes.
other people took down the towers in New York. Hey,
yeah.
Five Israelis dancing. It's what
yeah.
they do. Yeah.
Yeah, it is what they do. They
yeah.
I found
well,
it. I'll send it to you.
We saw them like on hillsides or something. They were, again, just like during Operation Cast Lead, during this last one, Protective Edge, watching Gaza being bombed, and they were picnicking. So it was a big entertainment for them. Thank God they all don't think that way.
I'm sending it to you.
Okay. And I want to say, this is something I should have said earlier on the show, but when I was talking about being hacked, Aramarte Field Radio, Aramarte Field went down, of course. They took that away also. So by this time next week, we will have another page up, and we'll be starting over, but we will have a page. So.
That's so amazing that someone would bother to take it down, just a little talk radio blog.
They took
blog.
Everything, though, everything from my Facebook. They disappeared me. You could type my name in and nothing. No, they had nothing. No.
They are nuts.
All the groups, all the pages, the groups I adminned, everything. There were a couple that I was the only admin on, and those just disappeared. I mean, those... I know one is still there, but there's nobody, you know, so that's why we started that other one. But, yeah, Aramarte Field is gone. It was...
Cowards.
Exactly.
That's what they are. Afraid they can call and talk to us. I would be glad to debate with them.
Yeah.
But I don't really like debating with Zionists because they use too many lies as fact.
Yes.
So
really,
yeah.
A lot of them, they believe a lot of that lying propaganda, and they believe what they want to believe. Because a lot of what we say, we wish it wasn't true. We wish that it was made up, but it isn't. I mean, it's real. Sadly enough, it's real. But no. But as far as the hacking. If they thought they were going to shut me up, they were so wrong. So enough on that. But we will have another page by next week.
Yeah. There's still arrest. We had a case in Bethlehem. Two boys were injured by Israeli unexploded ordnance.
Oh, yes.
Two boys on Tuesday. They were taking their goats for a walk. And
I don't know. They weren't the first, were they, Reed?
No, not the first.
No.
Very serious injuries, very serious burns, very serious condition. 11 and 12 years old this time.
Can you imagine?
Just
out taking the
crazy.
Family off to graze. Yeah, but, well, every time there's a war someplace, I mean, they're still picking up little that, you know, kill you, bombs.
All over Gaza.
War. But they've been, I mean, places that were fighting, there's still, where was it? I think in Germany, there's still a bunch.
Oh, wow.
But what are some of those countries,
Yugoslavia?
I don't think. Maybe Yugoslavia. Remember Paul McCartney's ex-wife had not Linda, but the one after her, had been involved in some kind of an organization that was doing that kind of thing. But also there's a wonderful, wonderful organization called Hero Rats. We all know that little rats are very, very smart. But these rats are trained to they're little landmine things, and it won't hurt the rats because they don't weigh enough to trip it. But they find them, so they are trained, and so like the hands and the rats go out to some of these areas around the world, and they have found an awful lot of these bombs, so they could get them and defuse them. So a lot of countries have that. But yeah, Gazas are new. I can't imagine sending the kid out just to do a family, you know, a chore or whatever. A nice day too. The kid's out with his friend or his brother, and then they get blown up.
It's like living in a war zone, and not only that. Today,
it's a war zone.
Today, military vehicles entered southern Gaza Strip on early morning, and they started opening fire towards agricultural areas where farmers were working. It was about 12 military vehicle man, news agency says. And the vehicle reportedly crossed 200 meters into the strip.
So
agricultural
so
workers were forced to leave their land again. No injuries.
Again.
It's happened so many times.
But that is psychological warfare. They're trying... I think I told you before that a friend of mine
terrorizing them.
A video of that. A lot of young people were out doing the, like gathering the, some kind of crop that's like long and stocky. I mean, it might have been hay or something like that. And they had the donkey and the cart, but they were near the towers. And they were shooting at them. They had internationals with them and everything, and they were shooting at them.
By the way, the testimonies from the Russell Tribunal are all chilling about unlawful killings and everything.
Yes, that's what people have just been saying. I mean, people just spoke the truth, and it all came out. It was,
One of the testimonies, for example, is a soldier coming up to people and asking them who speaks Hebrew. The one that said yes got shot. That was one testimony from the Blumenthal, Max, is that his name? Let me tell you his name. Iran Efrati gave a nice testimony. Anyone who doesn't know Iran Efrati should check out. He's an Israeli soldier who is speaking out. Max Blumenthal gave an amazing testimony in the Russell Tribunal. I recommend listening to it where he talks
really?
About it.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes people that you don't expect maybe to be quite so articulate will come out and really lambast them. I think did you talk about Naomi Klein the other day? Because she has lots of people with, you know, coming out, because she had just pretty much bought the rhetoric for quite a while about that. But no more. So more and more people are getting it. And yeah, the Russell Tribunal was very needed. I hope that something comes out of that. But something will, because something is coming from everything the people are doing. It's all building. And more and more people are seeing it.
I hope so. It's about time we all use our little voices. We're not powerless. I'm very worried about my friends in Palestine are all going through their struggles. Their life is all very hard.
It's very hard.
They get no refugee status in the United States. They cannot escape. It's very troubling.
No. Because United States and Israel are such buddies. So
they're too close.
Yeah, I mean, United States won't give them refugee status, because that would be like saying that there's something wrong with Israel.
Well, we're working on it. We're hoping to change that. There's activists working on trying to change it. I'll tell you how it's going. So in Israel, there's this rap star who is really a mouthpiece for IDF, and everyone loves him. He's very famous. And he said that he's going to that violence needs to be used against lefties. He spoke publicly and called to beat up lefties. And not only that, when the lefties were angry about it and called him names on Facebook, now he said he's going to take them all to court, that he's going to war with them, and he's going to sue them for making him look bad.
Bullshit. If somebody has like photos of everything with him threat or with him telling people to kill them, that won't work. I mean, because that's like inciting. That is telling people to suggest, you know, that they kill somebody.
Inciting against the left in a fascist state is so welcome, and many people don't understand it's inciting. They're so conditioned to accept it from birth. They've never seen anything else.
Yeah.
Wow. Shocking, I'll tell you that. It's really shocking. He is the worst rapper in the world. It's funny. He's so bad.
Oh, but people like him? I mean, he has a
Yeah,
following.
He's got fans. And their number one singer is a rapist, and the guy who gives advice to Bibi about Palestinians is the same guy that said that Palestinian women should be raped.
Oh, that one. Oh, he's a
super rape culture on steroids.
He's just an asshole.
It's a rape culture on steroids. I've never seen anything like that. It is really mad. It's surreal.
Yeah, he was the one that told the military like that it was okay because they needed to relieve their stress, right? So it was okay to rape the women.
Oh, that's what the rabbi said. The military rabbi.
That was the rabbi. Well,
this guy said to do it to hurt Hamas. His excuse was that that's the only thing that will bother Hamas is if you rape their women. As if they're different from us and they have no humanity.
Well, no, see, right there, it shows he doesn't even care about their own army because men that are encouraged to do that, then this violence grows in them. They're going to use it on their own people. And you can, if somebody in the height of whatever who decides to do this because this guy said to do it, and then when he goes back to his woman, his wife or his girlfriend or whatever, there's going to be problems. And if he says he did this, he may be ending his relationship or his marriage.
Absolutely.
And so this guy who says that, he has no no concern for his own people, even. Because he's telling them to do something that could potentially ruin part of their lives, for a while at least. So, you know, that's just bizarre. It just shows they don't care.
That could explain why so many... Why there's so much sexual harassment in Israel.
Well, don't you usually have it when you don't respect? When there's no respect, then there's harassment? Don't the two go together?
Definitely. I couldn't go anywhere without harassment, catcalls, rude gestures. But it was never nice. It was never in a way that you could relax and laugh with them. It was always scary.
Right. It wasn't the laughy, just smile and laugh and keep going kind of thing. I mean, this was scary, what you're talking
about.
It
was. That's why I left everyone. I left because I was scared. The men there really scared me. I went to Europe, I noticed a huge difference in the culture. I wanted to stay.
Yeah.
Very scary. But there's good pockets in Israel too, of good people.
I
remember.
Definitely. Yeah.
I remember being surrounded by a very good pocket of great people too. But it's scary when you try to go home from work and you're alone in the street. I didn't like that.
Yeah, because I mean, that's like a safe environment. You go to work or you go to school and then you go home and you should feel safe. But yeah, I don't want people to think that we're knocking Israelis, because we're not knocking Israelis. We're knocking the government and the people who follow what the government says. And, and even some of them that are just so stupid, we just consider them so ignorant. We're not saying that at heart they're bad people.
If the word patriotic didn't come from the word patriarchy, I would even say I'm patriotic. But to me, the country is one state for both people, equal rights. You know, I don't want apartheid.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, the left to me is very patriotic because they are ready to face the hate from the right wing in order to speak up.
Well, that's what some of the founders, I don't know which one of the, I think it was probably one of the signers of the Declaration, I may be wrong there, in this country, said that, you know, anyway, like the act of a patriot is to not agree with the government, but to, like, try to make the government better. If the government's doing something wrong, you fight against it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, very true.
That's what a patriot does. So... You don't just go along with it and say, oh, sure, let's just go kill everybody because the government tells us, yeah, I'm really patriotic. I'm all for killing people. You know, that's not patriotic. No, that's just stupid. But we do have
those. Absolutely.
We have them. But
yeah, we need to educate them when they're young. They're educated wrong at a very young age.
Yes. And you know what?
There's a soldier myth going on.
Pardon?
There's a soldier myth where soldiers are these brave men who are saving us.
Yeah. And
which really...
what are they saving us from? Nothing.
The soldiers I have met are really upset that their life is ruined because they had to fight in a war for oil and not for what they were told. And they feel... now they can't trust anyone or anything, and they are very traumatized. There's a bunch of them here in my area. People who came back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. They were lied to. Totally.
Oh,
and
they're so sad. They were crying. One of them cried first time I met him. I was already crying talking about it. Yeah. This country really hurt these boys. This is real betrayal.
It is betrayal. Because you think that you are doing something good and something heroic.
Yeah.
You're doing something for your family and your friends, your country. Because those people over there, I mean, heaven knows they're devils, right? And then you find out that wasn't the case. That's just too sad.
Killing is not something humans are meant to do. There's a reason it's the First Amendment and the Ten Commandments. It is because the veterans I've spoken to who killed, they will never get over it.
No.
They're suffering right now.
Well, you know, even people who kill to protect themselves, I mean, like somebody's coming in your house and they've got a gun and you kill, I mean, you're still going to have a little twinge because that was a human being. But when you figure out that you just went and killed people for no reason except somebody else's greed and the lies you were told,
I think that's why so many kill themselves.
I think so too. They can't live with what they did, and they don't have the support.
They don't. I have to end up talking them out of it. People like me have to end it up, and it's very hard for people, normal people like me and you, to do it. They know they can talk to me and you because they know we know what they've been through, but they can't go talk to everyone about it.
No,
they're afraid
people
will judge them,
right? And say, "Well, you were doing that was a good thing. You did a good thing. You should be proud of yourself." And in the meantime,
I was very close to some American war heroes, whatever you call war heroes, and I'll tell you, if I could speak in their name, one of them who is not here anymore would say, "One man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter," and then he said that he just. That it's all about money.
It is. And that's it. When they realize it, that's it. But, Sarit, our time is up.
Okay.
Yeah, next.
So people, next don't let your friends serve. Don't
Pardon?
Let anyone serve. No one should serve.
No, don't. Talk them out of it. Lock them up until they get some sense in them. Do whatever it takes. Yeah.
Show them testimonies. Let them meet soldiers who came back.
Exactly.
Before.
I mean, just have them go to, like, Breaking the Silence and see what the Israeli soldiers say about what it was like. Veterans for Peace
for,
in this country?
Yeah, Veterans for Peace, Breaking the Silence.
Yeah. See what people who really did this think about it. And we'll be back next Wednesday. We will have a Facebook page up, and Rick Schmidt will be back on Wednesday also. So we'll see you
okay.
then.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.